The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Overcrowding, inadequate food provision, lack of private space and restricted family life. They're systemic issues in emergency accommodation centres rather than isolated incidents. This is according to this new research out today, which calls for these places to be regulated and inspected by HICWA. So is the asylum system fit for purpose, or does it need to go change altogether? I'm joined in the studio by Pather Tobin, TD and ANTHU leader, and Nick Henderson, who's CEO of the Refugee Council. And you're both welcome. Thank you for being here. Pather, I think most people would be surprised to hear that the state HICWA only inspects about 10% of these emergency accommodation centres. I mean, it's completely unregulated if it is emergency accommodation. We surely can't stand over this. I mean, you babies who can't crawl, can't learn to walk, people who say they're afraid and sometimes hungry.
Yeah, no, I agree. Listen, every individual who is in the care of the state in this country needs to be treated with respect and decency. That's the first, you know, foundation rule that should be there, no matter where they're from and who they are. And, you know, this exists right across the accommodation settings for people. You know, it's similar to people in emergency accommodation, homeless people, for example, who are missing children, who are missing their developmental milestones because of the fact that there isn't enough space to crawl or to walk, or, you know, people are forced to kettle cook. This is people who are forced to, you know, eat,
make noodles in a kettle,
kettle and sit beside the nightstand in their bedroom to eat. So right across this emergency accommodation situation, the government is just really, really poor in delivering services. In the previous government, Roger Gorman bought 21 buildings for the purpose of accommodating people in emergency accommodation, and none of those have actually been put into use at the moment. So there is an incompetency within the delivery of infrastructure in the state, right across the state, mm-hmm. which is leading to significant problems in this space as
but
well.
But do you say that we should be accommodating fewer people?
Well, like, I think another aspect of this is we had a big spike in about 2023 in relation to the number of people coming into the country. So it went from about 13,000 to 18,000 seeking asylum. So right now there's about 33,000 people accommodated under the system. And let's be honest, there are two cohorts of people coming to this country. There are those who are fleeing war and violence and need help. And there are also those who are using the system for economic purposes to come to the country to work. And so all we've said at the start is we need a system that actually differentiates between those much, much faster and returns those who don't need help home faster. And that would put less pressure on the emergency
system. Let's see what Nick has to say about that. So a lot of this has to do with the system being slow and not being able to figure out who should be here and who should not be here.
It does in part, but principally in our view at the Irish Refugee Council, the blame for this situation is government inaction. It's a pretty extraordinary situation where HICWA, who is very able to do inspections, as we know from nursing home settings and other areas, are only able to inspect 10% of all the property that is accommodating international protection applicants. That's extraordinary. We've campaigned for several years for HICWA to expand their mandate or simply just switch their mandate, because it's emergency accommodation, and it's the Duras report today. Their point is that emergency accommodation, where, and we see this through our own work, where people are encountering the most difficult situations, greatest overcrowding, that's not being inspected.
So HICWA doesn't have jurisdiction over emergency accommodation, full stop, can't go in there, doesn't go in there, and so anything can happen.
Exactly, and that's due to the contractual arrangement between the accommodation centre and previously the Department of Children, but now the Department of Justice.
So, and I see a suggestion today that some operators are diverting into having emergency accommodation. Now, you have to suspect that that is due perhaps in part to the fact that it can't be inspected.
Yeah, very possibly. Very possibly. I think there's widespread concern across the political spectrum about how our protection accommodation system is managed and the amount of money that's spent on it. Principally, as a charity supporting refugees and people seeking asylum, our concern is for the people in that system, and we have grave concern about it. But one way that we could take the step of ensuring good value for money for the accommodation that the state is procuring is expanding HICWA's remit or making HICWA's remit more precise to focus on the accommodation provision that is most problematic.
Okay, so what do you say to that? That's a very easy fix, isn't it? That HICWA's remit is expanded to cover emergency accommodation.
Yep, I agree that should be the case. We should have a basic standard in this country in terms of how we treat all people in the care of the state. Like, the government's, you know, I know from anecdotal evidence of people telling me, for example, people with mental health issues who are put into these emergency accommodations, practically no supports for them at all. And that has an effect on the person with the mental health issue and the other individuals sharing the accommodation with them. But we also, we also have to realise that pretty much 50% of people who are in emergency accommodation in this country are not likely to be asylum seekers. And that it's taken 16 months at the moment to fully to process those
individuals. What are they, in your view, economic migrants?
Yeah, so the figures that the government themselves are producing at the moment are showing that about 80% of first applications are failing. And then when you take out the second and the appeals, it's about 48% of people who are failing. So It would create space, it would ease pressure if the government could process those numbers much, much faster.
So they shouldn't be here in the first place.
Nick is right that the government is to blame in this. But to be honest, if we're honest, those who are abusing the system are also to blame. Because if a person's coming from economic reasons, they are in many ways taking resources from those who are actually asylum seekers fleeing war and violence.
Is that happening, Nick?
No, and Peter and I have spoken about this in meetings and in other debates. There's a disagreement between our two approaches. In our view, there is a fundamental right to apply for asylum. The fact that somebody may not be successful at the end of that application process does not mean that they were wrong to make that application in the first place. A person has a right to make an application. There's a process that decides whether somebody is a refugee or not. As Peter says, if you look at the statistics, they are available on the Department of Justice's website. Something like 46% of final decisions made in 2025 were positive. Yeah. You know, that's quite a high recognition rate.
Yeah, but if they're not genuine asylum seekers, what they are doing is taking up place in an accommodation centre where a person who has fled a war should be and is perhaps in one of these places where they're afraid, underfed and scared.
We've worked with people for the last 30 years. People come here with relatively little understanding of the asylum process that they're in. They may not fit the law that is in front of them that they're required to fit. People move for multiple reasons, but in our experience, it's because of fleeing war and persecution, fearing instability in their country and other issues. It's verging on victim blaming if we're saying that somebody in the system is the cause of the problems around them and the accommodation issues that we're discussing.
So Nick is right that everybody has a right to apply for asylum. Everybody's innocent until proven guilty. So the system respects at the start of the process that everybody's treated the same. But the system also understands at the end of the process, not everybody is the same. So not everybody who has applied for asylum is an asylum seeker. Some are economic migrants. And if you're coming to this country as an economic migrant, using the asylum system, that is morally wrong in my view. And you're consuming materials that are there for people who need them. And like, people are rational. So like, there's people who are living in other countries are rational beings who make economic decisions for their own betterment and for their families.
But it sounds to me as though, I mean, Nick, you mentioned victim blaming. It's not up to the people to make the decision. It's up to the state to make a quick decision on who's an economic migrant and who's an asylum seeker.
I agree.
And if that's not working, that's where the problem is, with the individuals.
So the primary responsible is on the state. So for years, we had a situation where a person could come to this country, apply for asylum and wait for maybe 2 or 3 years to get their first application made, then appeal, wait for a couple of years to get the appeal made, then potentially go for a judicial review, wait for a period of time for the judicial review, fail that, get a deportation order and not be deported. Mm-hmm. And that was the message that was given by the government internationally. And if you're a rational person in another country looking to economically improve your life, that system is attractive. And all we're saying is, let's get to a stricter system, a system that differentiates properly between those who need help and those who don't, makes that decision fast. And then those who actually need help in this country are treated with respect and are given a good accommodation and so that their children can grow and flourish in this country.
Okay, so there should be a way to be able to differentiate between economic migrants and asylum seekers at a an earlier stage.
But there very much is, Claire. There is the international protection process that currently exists. It's a really arduous process. We are working with people in that system every day. You arrive at the International Protection Office, you're completing the questionnaire on the same day in a cramped waiting room. You're going to be interviewed relatively quickly. It's going to be difficult to find a lawyer. You're living on a very little amount of money. Your kids won't get child benefit. You're likely to be living in overcrowded accommodation. I think there's a portrayal that our asylum system is a land of milk and honey. It very much isn't. And that's our experience as an organisation advocating for people, but it's also the experience that we see every day by assisting people.
And Pater, when you talk about the length of time and previous times it took to get through this system, you are giving the impression that people are living a good life, you know, in those circumstances. And to be fair, they really are not.
No, listen, I would not envy any individual who's living in one of these emergency accommodation systems. Absolutely not. And it is a disaster for many, many people. It has a, especially for children in terms of their development, it is not a good place to be raising children, for sure. But there, what I'm saying to you is that we do, you know, have to realise that back in 21, 22, 23, the process was a lot less strict.
Yeah, but look at it now. Look at what Nick has just described now.
The system is getting stricter. I welcome the fact, and I've been on the record, I've welcomed the fact that the system is getting stricter at the moment. And that's having a positive effect, and that's having an effect on numbers. So I think it was 18,000 people who came in the system in 24. That fell to 13,000 people in 2025. So that's having exactly the effect that we said it would if the government became stricter. That will reduce the pressure.
What more do you want to have happen?
Well, I still think that's, you know, we're still dealing with people for 16 months in terms of applications in some situations, and that's too slow.
Is that true, Nick?
Yeah, it is. We've got several trends in our asylum process at the moment. One is that for a certain amount of caseload, decisions are being made quite quickly, in a matter of months, even weeks. We have concerns about decisions being made so quickly. And then for another group of people, it seems that they're waiting for a decision for an even longer period of time. One problem that we have at the moment is quite considerable delays at the International Protection Appeals Tribunal. It's the one appeal that you have.
All right, listen, we have to leave it there. But thank you both, Pather Tobin and Nick Henderson, for being with us.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.